Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
And now, The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints presents Enduring It Well. What is a balanced life? In life's journey, often a winding road from birth to death, we meet opportunities and challenges that shape us and teach us the lessons we need in life. As we travel through life, we can be enticed to pursue one teaching while perhaps neglecting another in our zeal. Some find the latest popular principle intriguing and adapt it while placing other teachings, just as significant, on the shelf. Some can even become so focused on one important aspect of life that they become obsessed, even fanatical, with no regard for balance. So what does it mean to live a balanced life? How can a short-sighted perspective be harmful to the long-term nature of our eternal journey? What is the value of being balanced in our approach to living day to day while looking into the eternities? Our Father in Heaven created this existence for us in order for us to experience a variety of learning opportunities. Life's diverse lessons and the wisdom we gain in experiencing them shape us and allow us to meet the full measure of our creation. By remaining balanced in our approach to life, we are receptive to the unique lessons designed for our eternal progression. The restored gospel of Jesus Christ affords us all tools necessary to make the most out of our mortal education. This is Enduring It Well with host W.A. Christensen.
Dr. Lane Smith is a physician specializing in psychiatry. He's a distinguished life fellow of the American Psychiatric Association, board certified by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, and is a past president of the Utah Psychiatric Association. Throughout his distinguished career, he has worked with troubled teens, distraught adults, and people whose lives are on the brink. Through it all, he has kept a level head, centered in the teachings of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. It was something that was taught to him at a young age, being the grandson of Joseph Fielding Smith, the 10th president of the church. His own mother and father were wonderful examples of maintaining balance in day-to-day living, with their hearts and sights set on the eternities. Brother Smith is married to Val Smith, and they are the parents of 10 children. On the 23rd of August, 1973, Lane's parents made a visit to the Grand Canyon. Posing for photos at the canyon's rim, his father, then in his 60s, Joseph Fielding Smith Jr., son of President Smith, stepped back too far and, to the horror of the whole family, accidentally fell to his death in the Grand Canyon. Lane has a complete trust in a great plan that will reunite them as a family for the eternities. Lane, it's an honor to have you with us today on Enduring It Well. Thank you for coming in. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
So let's start right at the top. What is a balanced life?
You know, I think most of us have some sort of an idea of a balanced life. We live in a wonderful age where we have so much knowledge of things spiritual and physical. But let's kind of review what a balanced life would entail. We learn through the gospel that we have a constant need to feed ourselves both physically and spiritually. And I would add to that, we also need to feed ourselves emotionally. So probably the first thing I'd say about a balanced life is we need to take care of ourselves first. If we don't take care of ourselves, we're not able to take care of others.
What does it really mean to live a balanced life?
I think it's difficult for all of us to translate our beliefs into action. It reminds me of something from the poet where he said that we need to give to the pure intent the deed, the deed. I think all of us know that we should get enough sleep. I think all of us know we should be exercising. I think all of us know that we should be eating nutritious food, but not too much, not to be overweight. Yet if we look at the general population in and outside the LDS Church, the majority of our adults are overweight. So it is one thing to know how to lead a balanced life. It's quite another to actually lead it. So probably the big question is, how do we translate beliefs into action?
What kind of recommendation do you have to do that?
You know, I think all of us need to periodically take time to assess our lives. and to see where the gaps are between what we believe and what we're really doing. It's easy to get ourselves on autopilot and just get up, kind of pray by rote, eat by rote, go to our jobs by rote, and never really look and see whether we're doing what we want to do. So it's important from time to time to take stock of our lives and look at what we're doing. Some 34 years ago, when I was 40, I looked at my non-exercising. I knew it was important. I'd made some stabs on it over the years, but I never had kept at it. And I said to myself, what do I want to have when I'm old? And my reply was my health. If I have my health, I can work. If I don't have my health, I don't have anything. And life's a lot more than golden bedpans and round-the-clock duty nurses. So I started exercising. It's made an enormous difference in my life. So again, the first thing is to sit down and say, how am I doing with what I believe compared to what I'm actually doing?
I think we've often seen that people can having an unbalanced life can become a trial in life. Also, there are people who have a variety of other things they're facing, other trials they're facing, and being balanced helps you through that difficult trial, or being unbalanced can just add to the problem that you're up against. How can a short-sighted perspective be harmful to the long-term nature of our eternal journey?
An awful lot of the world does not believe in eternity, and it makes all the difference in the world. I'm reminded of a poem where the line goes, why build these cities glorious if man unbuilded goes? I look at people who spend their whole lives trying to obtain wealth, as an example, or people who are trying to get well-positioned in a profession, and they devote their whole lives to this one goal, and you find along the way wreckages of things like families. They may lose a wife, lose their children along the way. They may totally neglect their spiritual development. It's very easy to do, and we don't have to look at, you know, severe psychopathology to see it. We just have to look around us. There are an awful lot of people that are climbing a ladder that's placed on the wrong wall. They get to the top of the ladder.
Whoops.
But when you're old, is it the right ladder?
With that in mind, what is the value of being balanced in our approach to living day to day while yet looking into the eternities?
You know, I look at balancing our lives in the same way I look at nutrition. You can have plenty of B vitamins, but if you don't have any vitamin C, you're going to get scurvy and it can kill you. It used to happen to mariners when they're away from land for long periods of time and they had inadequate nutrition. In that same sense, we need to meet all of our needs adequately or it can kill us in some area. Some people may want to do what they think are spiritual things to the exclusion of taking care of their physical needs, earning an adequate income for their families, as an example. Other people focus exclusively on their profession, and then again, they neglect their families. Other people just simply don't have a spiritual perspective. And to me, the spiritual perspective is what gives meaning and purpose and direction to everything else I do in life. I think I'm not just building for this life, I'm building for eternity.
Do you think you were taught that as a young boy?
Oh, absolutely. The gospel of Jesus Christ makes that very, very plain. And it's not just that I came in a home with active Latter-day Saint parents. If one becomes familiar with the gospel of Jesus Christ,
a convert even.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It becomes absolutely apparent that this is an eternal plan, not a plan, an eternal plan. And this is just a mortal existence as part of our eternal existence.
Do you think, given your extensive schooling and the training that you've had and then living through that profession, do you think the education you had in the gospel laid a foundation to allow you then to go all the way on through where you did in your profession?
I was taught that the glory of God is intelligence, or in other words, light and truth. And I was also taught from our scriptures that we should seek learning both from people and from good books. And so it set me down the right path right from the very beginning. And the whole goal, I think, of us as both Latter-day Saints and as human beings is to acquire knowledge, which is true knowledge, and wisdom, which is the application of knowledge.
Your grandfather is the 10th president of the church, Joseph Fielding Smith, and wrote a book that became hugely popular, a series of books, Answers to Gospel Questions. As a little boy, do you remember ever reading any of those questions and pondering those questions?
I think growing up in the environment I did was very much a blessing for me. I read all of my grandfather's works, and I read them early, and I read them as he produced them as I grew older. And it gave me a great foundation. For instance, the Doctrines of Salvation, which was a compilation of his works by his son-in-law, Bruce McConkie, formed, I think, the core of my understanding of the gospel of Jesus Christ at a very early age.
Lane, in your profession, what have you seen when people have become obsessed with one aspect of life and neglect another?
They shrivel. That's why I use the analogy of nutrition. Something dies when you neglect it. Everything has to be fed. We have to be fed physically. We have to be fed emotionally, and we have to be fed spiritually. And I suppose I could say we have to be fed intellectually. But I think I kind of put the intellectual into the spiritual, and the emotional.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And so as you've watched that and you see them shrivel, has that been a large part of your profession, trying to help people come back from that shriveled state that they're in, to help them become nutritionalized and back into a healthy state?
Psychiatry is the one profession in medicine that deals with the entire human being. We don't just deal with the brain or the mind, as it is said. We deal with all of their health and all of their issues and all of their lives. And so wherever the point is they're having a problem, you focus on that. Sometimes people are like people with suspenders who get hooked someplace. You can go out of ways, but you know it holds you back. And so wherever people have a shortfall, that's where we move in and try and get them to grow again. President Spencer W. Kimball once said that we should address our weakest points first, in a sense, our worst spiritual fault or shortcoming. If you could graph all of the attributes of a human being on a scale of some sort and put it like out like a map on a wall, what you should do is go at wherever the lowest point is, wherever you're doing the poorest, and attack that first. So we all have weaknesses. There's not a thing I do perfectly. I've never done anything perfectly in my life. I've done some things better than others. But when we're addressing our lack of a balance, what we should go to is the thing that causes us the most harm, whether it's physical harm, emotional harm, or spiritual harm, and address it first.
And after all, isn't that the reason we came here, is to learn how to overcome those obstacles in our lives?
Absolutely.
So what have you found to be the largest hurdle for people who cannot or will not see the need to be balanced in their lives?
I'm going to wing that a little bit, but perhaps it's the inability to be completely honest with ourselves. It's painful to really look at yourself hard and compare yourself against maybe what you could be and should be. And we often can develop comforting little excuses to ourselves that allow us to go on not addressing the things that are really important to us. So again, maybe the most important issue is learning to be really honest about who we are and what we're doing and what we should be doing.
You know, it's interesting, recently Elder M. Russell Ballard of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles was faced in his life with the possibility of cancer, and when he was left alone, his mind began to fill with all sorts of thoughts that one would when that kind of news is presented. It wasn't long after that he spoke in General Conference, and he gave a talk at that time called Keeping Life's Demands in Balance. And I just wanted to quote a couple things and sort of get your feeling on some of the things that he said. One of the things he said is, sometimes we need a personal crisis to reinforce in our minds that we really value and cherish. And then he went on to say, as most of you know, coping with the complex and diverse challenges of everyday life, which is not an easy task, can upset the balance and harmony we seek. Many good people who care a great deal are trying very hard to maintain balance, but they sometimes feel overwhelmed and defeated. Did you see that in your practice?
Of course, all the time. I think it's a human experience. I think when people want to be better, that they're going to have that kind of a feeling from time to time. They really are. It's not unique to one person. It's not unique to serious episodes coming into our lives. I think if we honestly look at ourselves at times, we get overwhelmed with our inadequacies.
Would it be safe to say that being unbalanced can in fact be a trial in someone's life?
It is a trial.
I think it's interesting. Another thing that Elder Ballard said was many people have, and this goes right along with what you said a moment ago, Dr. Smith, many people have heavy demands upon them stemming from parental, family, employment, church, and civic responsibilities. Keeping everything balanced can be a real problem. And then he said something that you just said, and I found this fascinating. And as far as I know, you hadn't read this before we came into the studio
today.
No,
I hadn't.
He said that a periodic review of our lives is really important. What lessons have you learned about the nature of people that convinces you of the need for the guiding influence of the Savior in our life?
Well, I think the scriptures say the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I already used the analogy of being batteries, and we run down very quickly. We simply need to be recharged. And we need to be recharged in all sorts of ways. Physically, we recharge ourselves by resting. We condition our batteries by exercise. We make them better batteries, as it were. We have more energy. We can do more each day. We are forgetting something every day. So if we're not learning new things, we're becoming more ignorant every day of our lives. So we have to study. We have to learn new things. We have to discipline ourselves to simply read and listen to learn new things. But it's the same thing spiritually. We need to be fed. And that's why we've been given these tools of prayer, of scripture reading, of church attendance, of listening to conference, and reading good books, both written by church and church members and others. But again, we have to use them or they don't work.
Let's talk for a minute about extremes, because we've all known people in our lives who may take an aspect, take something to the extreme at the cost or the expense of not being balanced in their other areas. I think King Benjamin did an amazing... King Benjamin warned his people about going to extremes, even in doing good. He said, quote, "See that all things are done in wisdom and order, for it is not requisite that a man should run faster than he has strength." That's in Mosiah 4:27.
You know, and the prophet Joseph Smith was also told by the Lord, in a sense, to pace himself. We have to understand life's a marathon, not a sprint. And if you don't pace yourself, you burn out and you're not going to be any good to anybody. And that's what King Benjamin's saying. That's what the Lord's saying to us.
I would imagine growing up with a grandfather as an apostle and eventually the president of the church, one might think that there was no room for simply living life. All scripture study, gospel topics all the time, that sort of thing. While I'm sure those things took place on a level that most of us never see, surely there were times your family experienced the normal, everyday side of life. Can you share some of those moments with us?
Joseph Fielding Smith had a balanced life. He exercised regularly until he was 79. He was at one time with a companion, the doubles handball champion of Utah, while he was an apostle. And when he was told by a non-LDS doctor that it was too strenuous, he switched from that to swimming. He was told by this doctor friend of his that it was too strenuous, and he quit. And his friends kept encouraging him to play, telling him about how it was good for him, etc., etc. He said, "No, if the doctor says it's too strenuous, I won't do it." When Grandpa told me that story, he chuckled and said, "They're all dead now." But the point was, he exercised all of his life, you know, most of his life. But he was an ordinary man at home. For instance, he liked to make pies, as an example. So I think sometimes we have misconceptions about our leaders. They're very much like us, except they do it better.
Lane, what does the gospel and particularly scriptures teach us about being balanced?
You know, when you say the gospel, this includes the teachings of our leaders. And if one were to look at the advice that we get from the scriptures and from our leaders, from our prophets, I don't think one could ever come to any conclusion except that they constantly stress balance in our lives. They really touch on all the aspects of our lives. They really do.
As you look at the Savior's life, what evidence can you see that he lived a balanced life?
The Savior went on missions, and there are periods of time that we don't know what was happening. My assumption is he was rebalancing his life. But the little bit that we have about him says he increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. That one verse alone from Luke tells us that he led a balanced life. Notice that part of his balance, despite the fact he was the Son of God and that he had created this earth under the direction of God and many other creations, he still felt the constant need for prayer and meditation to be apart from the others while he pondered and planned and prepared.
It seems to me that he was so balanced in his life that he was able to be sensitive and to be genuine and to care for others and to be aware of their struggles and the trials that they were going through.
Christ had an enormous range of interests. We see it in his parables, the stories he tells. He tells about various aspects of life. He knew an awful lot about life. It wasn't just he was reading the Torah all the time. He actually had a very, very balanced life, as you can tell from the things that he spoke of and the range of experiences which he used in his teaching.
Lane, what do you remember about your grandfather? Do you have a favorite memory?
I'll give you what I think is the memory I treasure most of my grandfather. At age 12, I became a deacon. And my father was a member of the general board of the Sunday school, and so he had a reserved seat, and we could go to church later. But I wanted to go to the priesthood session of conference. And so I left by bus just after conference ended at 4 in the afternoon. Then priesthood was at 7, and went right down, got myself a seat in the tabernacle right close to the front. 5 minutes before the priesthood session was to begin, an usher asked me if I would give up my seat to Senator Thomas, who is the United States Senator. Well, I did, but then I looked around, the tabernacle was full, and I didn't know where I would go. And my grandfather was observing this from a distance, so he didn't know what was going on, and he could see something was wrong. So he signaled me to come up to where he was. So I went up to the stand where he was, and he says, "What's wrong?" I said, "Well, the usher asked me to give my seat to Senator Thomas." And these are direct quotes from him. He said, did he? "Well, he had no right to do that. You sit here with me." So I spent my first conference I ever attended in person, a priesthood session, sitting next to my grandfather with the apostles in the tabernacle.
Tell us what happened to your father, Joseph Fielding Smith, Jr., at the Grand Canyon.
He was on a stake outing. He was a bishop. His stake president was Russell Nelson, who is now a member of the Quorum of the Twelve. His brother was a member of the stake presidency. He was standing on a little ledge about 19 feet from the edge at Cape Royal. The mother and he posed for a picture, and she said to him, "Well, Joseph, let me get your picture. I never get your picture." So she walked off, turned around, and he was gone. Evidently, he lost his balance, stepped off this little 6-inch ledge, and then it was kind of an incline, and he just stumbled backwards, and somebody saw him fall, and as he went over the edge, he said, "Here I go." Fell 40 feet and broke his neck, and at age 60, he was dead. I was on a vacation when I got the news, and it was stunning. Of course, I never expected my father, who was in great health, to die. But interestingly, about 3 months before he died, he said to my mother, "Well, Zella, I've done everything my patriarchal blessing says I'm going to do. I guess I can go anytime." Little did he know how prophetic it was.
Wow. How difficult was that for the family when that took place?
President Joseph Fielding Smith, my grandfather, said at the funeral of Richard L. Evans that no good man, no righteous man is taken before his time. The Lord doesn't send for us before our allotted span if we're living righteously. I assume that was my father's allotted span, and that he had done all the Lord sent him here to do, and he was sent home, and we made peace with this as a family. We felt the Lord sent for him, the Lord wanted him.
And it was a shocking, unusual tragedy, something no one plans on. How inspired were you during that time? How did you feel comfort?
Well, you know, first of all, my father was in great health. There was no way he would die if it wasn't for an accident. If the Lord wanted him, he had to get him in some other way. I find that I need the gospel of Jesus Christ every day of my life, sometimes more than others. I need it to put up with man's injustices to man all over the earth, the horrible things we do to each other. I need it to put up with just the pain of living, the ordinary things of the loss of loved ones, serious illness, things like that. But the gospel is my comfort. It's my shield. It's my protection. It's my refuge. So with the gospel, these things aren't really that bad. I know my father will live again in the flesh. I know he exists as a spirit being at this time. I know that my parents, who are both dead, were righteous people, and that gives me great comfort. I don't get a lot of pain out of it. Did I miss my father? Yes, I wept bitterly. But I know that I have my parents, and I know that I'll see them again. I once, as a smart aleck youth, asked my mother what was the most important virtue to have. What was the most important thing that a human being needed to succeed? And she, without batting an eye, said humility. And I thought, I've got her. And I thought, and I thought, and I thought, and I couldn't refute it. Humility is the beginning of wisdom. To understand that we don't know, or we don't know enough. Absolutely essential to understanding our relationship to God. No matter how smart we are, we're utterly ignorant compared to the Lord. Absence of humility leaves a blind spot. Humility leaves us open to be taught anywhere. In a sense, everything's on the table when you're humble. And if you're not, you get lifted up in your pride, and then you miss something. I can't imagine my life without the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's woven into all of my thinking and all of my behavior. It's woven into my decisions and my choices. It's just so much a part of my life, I can't imagine it not being there. I've tried to ponder what my life would be without it, and it would be immensely different. I absolutely need the gospel of Jesus Christ. It irons out all the things that are wrong that exist in the world around me. One of the things about psychiatry is it's trained me to be very sensitive to the consequences of behaviors, like wars. I read the Book of Mormon and I think about the PTSD of the people as they got chopped up by their various weapons. I wonder about their families, the poverty, what kind of help they got from their neighbors and others. And I read about things all over the world. I watch TV and look at events all over the world where man's inhumanity to man is manifest. And it would cause me immense sorrow if it weren't for my knowledge of eternity. I love the verses in the Book of Revelation where it says that then will God wipe away all their tears. So I have a constant sorrow in my life that I can't get away from because of the world's wickedness, but I have a constant comfort that balances that in the end God will make everything right and whole and corrected. That is a great comfort to me. If I ponder deeply, I suspect my most precious possession is my testimony. I believe that God lives. I believe that Jesus Christ is literally His Son. I believe that Joseph Smith was a prophet of God called in this latter days to restore the gospel in its fullness upon the earth. I believe that Thomas S. Monson is his worthy successor. And I believe the Book of Mormon is the most correct book on the face of this earth, and that it is a great keystone in our religion. I appreciate the Book of Mormon because when I get troubled by things I don't understand, gaps in my knowledge, I fly back to the Book of Mormon. I think of all the things I've read about in that book and about that book by men who are more learned than I, and I consider my prayers, and I know that book is true. Now, if that book is true, then Joseph Smith was indeed a prophet, and God does indeed live, and Jesus is indeed the Christ. This is my testimony. Maybe the most important thing I've learned is that God lives and loves each one of us. Everything else really flows from that. Greatest truth in the universe is God lives. Either He does or He doesn't. And once you establish that God lives, everything else kind of flows from that. What kind of a God is He? He's a loving God. And that to me is the most important thing. I do not believe in a malevolent or a thoughtless or a cruel God whatsoever. All of the finest virtues that I can imagine don't begin to describe the God that I believe lives and is our God. That's the greatest truth I know. Everything else just flows from it.
This has been Enduring It Well with host W.A. Christensen, presented by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.